This is the Green Zone, Jamie and Locker. I am Locker. Carl Banks, former NFLer, two-time Super Bowl champion, now the voice of the New York Giants for Sirius XF, XM, NFL Radio, and WFNA in New York. Carl, I want to thank you for joining the show today. Thank you very much.
Locker, thanks for having me, man.
The Giants have been busy in the offseason, and from everything that I've read, it looks like they're in the middle of rebuilding both sides of the ball. I was curious when I saw that. Is this something that is concerning, or is it maybe a little bit settling, Carl, just based on the fact that it was something that needed to happen?
Well, I think the latter. You have a team that was bereft of talent. And they are now, you know, they've had two good drafts. And now you're starting to see, you know, the fruits of some of those draft choices from last year. A lot of those guys contributed, and this year they had another good draft. I think what they needed to do is just to get better talent. And, you know, when Brian Daboll and Joe Shane first took over the team, they were in cap hell. So even when they were trying to, hold the rope, if you will, the free agents were B-level free agents. You know, they just couldn't get top free agents because they didn't have the money to do so. And as a result, you know, you had an offensive line that had one really good player in Andrew Thomas. And then when Andrew Thomas goes down, the offensive line is like a game of Jenga. I mean, it just wobbles and it just falls apart. So they are now in a space where, you know, they've gotten better talent, and, you know, health always factors in. But the reality is even the backups are better now, so that if a guy goes down, they can feel confident that they can put a good player in there.
Carl, how did fans react to the Russell Wilson signing?
Well, it's been a strange offseason. a lot of people were mixed, right? Because there were a few names that were floating out there. And primarily it was Aaron Rodgers. And it was just quiet while the Giants were, I guess, negotiating with Russell Wilson, and because they signed Jameis Winston first, and that kind of indicated to the fan base that they were going to draft a quarterback, right? And they didn't know which one it was going to be, the fans, that is. And then, you know, they signed Russell Wilson, and it was, you know, I think he got a pretty warm reception coming in because he's an accomplished quarterback. You know, whatever his situation was in Pittsburgh, it wasn't a mesh, but you can look at him and it was, okay, he's still got a live arm and he can move a bit. He's, you know, but it was just one of those deals where you look at it and you're like, okay, it wasn't like he was trash in Pittsburgh. It just didn't work out. So there was still something left. There was still tread on the tires. And so when he got to the Giants, it's been nothing but positivity. He's an incredible leader, and I say that he is chronically positive because he just not bad days for him when he's around his teammates. And, you know, for one of the, I think it's like the second youngest roster in football, they need that because he's a player that has been through adversity and he's come out on the other side of it. And he's he won a Super Bowl and he lost one by one play. And so he's been there. He's played with great players in this league. He's accomplished a lot. And listen, we don't know how long he's going to be in there because they drafted Jackson Dart, the player that both the general manager and the head coach wanted. But, you know, if it's going well, I can't imagine they make a change, and I think that's the problem that Giants fans should want.
Is Jackson Dart next up? Like, where is he on the depth charts? Let's say Russell Wilson goes out there and Achilles gone, out for the season.
Well, you have Jameis Winston.
Okay. All right.
And then there's Jackson Dart. But I think Jackson Dart is, you know, he's obviously their guy. He's their franchise in waiting.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of time when they get him to get the confidence that he's up to speed. He's going to play. They didn't draft him, you know, to put him in mothballs. But listen, it's you're behind Russell Wilson, and if Russell is playing well, you know, he just gets a little more time to learn. If, you know, Russell struggles, then, you know, I'm sure that timeline moves up a bit.
The Aaron Rodgers conversation is fascinating, and I don't want to dwell on this, but I do wonder what the reaction would have been like in New York. I can't even imagine. Can you make any sort of comments on that? If he had become a Giant, that town would have imploded. No.
Well, he was a Jet, and it didn't end well there. I think, you know, for me, I said this publicly, I said if Aaron Rodgers were to come to the Giants, there would be a few things that he would have to change in terms of leadership, because it just can't be, I said it couldn't be just him and whatever, you know, veteran player he brought along with him and then everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, you have a young roster that needs leadership, yeah. Right? And, you know, to isolate yourself and just say, we're just going to, you know, we'll get out here and we'll practice and that's it. Don't talk to me. It just wouldn't work. You know, he would have had to become a different type of leader with a young roster that's looking up to him. And, you know, I have nothing but respect for his talent. I don't know him personally. But I, you know, you see the reports and you see some of the way he interacts with folks and, you know, you just look at that and you say, would that be a positive in your locker room? Or is it just his results will speak for itself? And, you know, if that is what you're waiting on with Rodgers, you know, the first speed bump he hits, it's going to be mayhem in New York.
Carl Banks joining the Green Zone today. Of course, a couple of Super Bowls and covers now the Giants, the voice of the Giants for Sirius FM radio and WFAN in New York. Would you, Carl, consider the running back room to be a bit of a weakness on this Giants squad?
No, I think it's a young quarterback room, but I can't imagine it being a weak quarterback room. And I guess, can I just answer your question with a question so that I can get to an answer?
Yeah.
What would
be
considered, in your view, a weak quarterback room?
Well, I was actually focusing on the running back room. Did I say quarterback room, Carl? I meant the running back
room. I'm sorry, running back room.
Yeah.
What would be considered, is it lack of experience? Is it accomplishments? Because they have Singletary, they have Stoudemire. They have Tyrone Tracy.
Yeah.
They have Turbo. So it's not for lack of talent. So when you say it's a weak room by what standard, and I'm not being funny here. I just want to kind of understand when you put the question out, what does a good running back room look like? Because, you know, I think there's only one team in the league that's got a great quarterback room, and that's Philadelphia because it's Saquon Barkley there. Everybody else, you just want production, I think.
Yeah, but I think you would focus on production and maybe a standout running back. And I guess it's something that comes up when you focus on the Giants. It might be something that people consider a weakness.
And that's fair. I think it's fair because they didn't have much success, right? So you look at it and you say, okay, do they even have good runners? And then, you know, if because I'm sitting so close to the screen, you know, I see a bad offensive line that hampered the entire offense.
Yeah. Okay.
Right? And it just limited everything you could do. And, you know, if you can't block for the passer, teams can load the box and stop your runner. So I think we'll find out. And I think that would be the best answer for me is that we'll see. You know, because they just haven't had the opportunity to have success. Now, Tracy has shown flashes. Devin Singletary has been a good player in the league. We wouldn't call him an elite back, but he's been a productive back in the NFL. And, you've got Scam Catterboo, everybody's excited about. So as this offensive line goes, I think we'll see exactly what they have, because Tyrone Tracy is, he's explosive. He can catch out of the backfield. There are a lot of things he can do with his skill set, but, it's like my answer would be we'll see, because we haven't yet. And I think that's a fair question you asked, now that, we've kind of talked through it. Nobody has seen it. So, if you want to question the quarterback, the running back's room, I think that's fair.
Let's focus on the draft pick, because the way the draft played out, New York falling in, the Giants at number three, may have got what might be one of the better players down the road. I mean, in 5, 6, 7, 8 years, we might be talking about this guy and you guys with Abdul Carter. What do you like about his game, and what do you think he brings immediately to this New York Giants squad here in the upcoming season?
I think Abdul Carter gives this defense and Shane Bowen, the defensive coordinator, a lot of flexibility. He can play off the ball. He's a very gifted and instinctive pass rusher. And when you just look at him, you just see a kid that's different, right? Yeah. He moves different. He does things different. And, though I don't compare him to my former teammate, Lawrence Taylor, there are things you see him do instinctively that I know, if you asked him what move was that, he would give you the same answer that Lawrence Taylor gave you, is, I don't know. I got to go look at it on film. they just do things, instinctively. And he's going to be a big help for both Brian Burns and Kayvon Thibodeau. And, they just have flexibility with him. And they can be multiple on defense now. And, they've upgraded at corner. They upgraded at safety with Holland and Adebo. And, with the young draft choices that they had last year and Tyler Newbin and Phillips, they've got some talent now.
Nice. I want you to give us any games on the schedule for the Giants, Carl, that you have – like highlighted, any games that you're looking forward to this upcoming season?
I would say the first one, Washington. They've always played Washington close. Washington has kind of pulled away, and we're going to see just where the Giants measure up. That's their first game of the season, and we'll see how they measure up, because they were both basement dwellers until Jaden Daniels got there, and they got themselves, into the conference championship. So we'll see just where the Giants are and how they stack up.
Amazing, Carl. Thank you for your time today, my friend.
Locker, thank you, man.
That's Carl Banks, and a former New York Giant and a couple of Super Bowls under his belt. Giants could make some noise in the NFC East this year with the Jets, the Patriots, and the Eagles. The Giants have not won the division since 2011 when they won a Super Bowl. So it'd be interesting to see if they can make some moves this year. And like Carl said, they've done really, really well in the draft. Not too far away from a double take with Daryl Davis. This is 980 CGME and 650 CKOM. The Green Zone, Jamie and Locker. A quick update on the Jays. They are playing the third of a three-game series in Colorado against the Rockies at the top of the eighth. We have 11-1. I think we just got our first out for the Rockies. Yeah, Bichette is sitting down. Vladdy, a solo home run. So it is a 11-1. Gausman was on the mound at the... it looks like they might be... Yeah, he's getting a hug from Schneider, so it doesn't look like that's a pretty big game for him. Only one run. So it'll be interesting. I was just chatting with Scotty, the producer. We'll have to keep an eye on the number of hits in this game, because they were close to a franchise record for a two-game series with hits based on the 25 in the first game. So it looks like they might be on their way to breaking a franchise record in a three-game series for the number of hits. It's a bye week for the Riders, but Darryl Davis is still kicking around. We'll get his thoughts on the next benchmark for the Rough Riders. Is it beating the Blue Bombers? Is it beating the Ticats when they're in town on the 16th? A double take with Darryl Davis up next on the Green Zone, 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
Here on the streets of Bakersfield. Hey, you don't know me, but you don't like me.
This is the Green Zone, Jamie and Locker. Flying solo today. It's a Nihilist show. The Green Zone fan line, as always, 877-332-8255. I want you thinking about this, and we're going to bounce this off of Darryl here in a second as well. Next benchmark for the Riders. If there is that nagging doubt that this is a guaranteed great cup-bound team, what is it that you need to see them accomplish to get to that point for you as a fan? Not as a team, but you personally. Is it beating the Winnipeg Blue Bombers at the end of the month for the Labor Day Classic and the Banjo Bowl? Or is it beating the Hamilton Ticats, who are clear number two right now in the CFL, when they return from the bye week? Start thinking about it. Again, the fan line, 877-332-8255. And guess what? We have them here.
Double take with Darryl Davis.
Darryl!
Hi, Locker. How are you?
Good to see you,
I love this. Jamie's the way you take over the schedule and change everything around. So, yeah, I'll come in. When do you want me in? I'm here. You got it.
I knew I could count on you, Darryl. Your quick call.
And you know, the good thing is I didn't have to deal with Regina traffic at 5 p.m., so I appreciate coming in at 3:30, man.
That's way better. That's awesome. I knew we threw your day off a little bit, but I do appreciate it. So the benchmark, right? Where are you at? Are you in the camp of they need to beat the big bad Blue Bombers, or are you sort of going to gauge it more on the Hamilton Ticats matchup here on August 16th?
I'm a combination of this. This was supposed to be their hardest stretch, right? We had talked about that lots, Locker, even last week where you're saying that Montreal, right, laughingly easy for them, which was a surprise. Hamilton, Calgary, Winnipeg. For me, if they get out of the next four games and go 3 out of 4, to me, they're a championship. They're a Grey Cup solid, maybe the best. They might be anyway the Grey Cup contender, but if they can come out of these four games with three victories, I don't know which ones. That just shows they had to win one on the road, obviously, to do that. So I think that proves them to be bona fide number one team in the Canadian Football League.
The other conversation that we were having today was just trying to put, you know, our kind of nail down why this team is where it's at right now. And is it as easy as just saying, you know what? Corey Mace has just changed the culture of this team, and they are performing like a good football team needs to perform. Or is there more to it? Do we need to look to the upper management a little bit about how they were building it behind the scenes?
Oh, yeah. Like Jeremy O'Day was on hot water for 2 years ago. They're saying, oh, what a horrible team he's put together. But, you know, eventually it was where Craig Dickinson, the former coach, had kind of worn out his welcome with the team and wasn't being listened to anymore. He brought in the right guy. He brought in Corey Mace. Jeremy O'Day did, the general manager. He's got good personnel people around him, Jeremy O'Day does. He's brought in good people. But he's brought good players, but he's also brought in a good coach, a very good head coach, and good staff around them, who these players absolutely will do anything that's asked of them. So they have a good team. They have what great franchises have. They have good management at the top, stable management at the top. Yeah. They've hired a good coach who really knows what the players are thinking and can teach them, and they listen to them, and they're a talented bunch. Trevor Harris is playing absolutely terrific. I keep thinking all offseason I wrote about, oh man, he's going to be 39 years old. How's he going to be? I haven't mentioned his age once this year. You know, we do, I guess, when it comes up, but it's not a sticking point anymore because he's not playing like he's 39. He jokes about how young he actually feels, and he's playing that young. He doesn't need to run the way he throws. What they've done and patched this together with that offensive line, the way the defense is playing, the way the receivers have filled in for the injuries. Absolutely
patchwork
amazing.
On the receivers,
absolutely
too.
Amazing. Really impressive, and that's a tribute to Jeremy O'Day and his scouts and the personnel department. But they're also well-coached, and they really follow the leader exceptionally well because he's made to be a leader.
I think it's a lot of the conversations we're not having, like you just said, right? We're not talking about Trevor Harris's mm-hmm. age. We're not talking about Jeremy O'Day, mm-hmm. right? I remember when I first got here, Jeremy O'Day's name would come up and the text line would go crazy, mm-hmm. right? And
Where'd those critics? I don't know if they're all guys, but the critics, where'd the critics go, right?
It is interesting. And mm-hmm. I remember when Jamie would even mention his name, he'd get lit up right away about, mm-hmm. you know, the fact that if you gave him any amount of credit. Now, how many times have we even brought up Jeremy O'Day's name on the Green Zone this year or in any conversation about where this team is at?
He's like a good on-field official, right? You don't notice him when they're doing a good job.
That's a really good point.
And offensive lineman, the same thing. And the long snapper, if they're not making mistakes, they're doing the right things, you don't even talk about them. And I realize you always talk about the quarterback, the receivers, and the running backs that they're playing well, or defensive back or linebacker who makes an interception. But the guys who are toiling in anonymity, and we never mention them, they're doing a great job.
So, a sellout for the Labor Day class.
Always. Yeah.
I know that. Yeah. But is this early, or is this just par for the course?
It's about the same time as usual. The thing that surprised me, Locker, at the start of the year was when they tried to sell a two-pack of tickets to that first game with Ottawa in town and to the Labor Day Classic, right? Because the Labor Day Classic always sells out. I think they were a little disappointed in the opening day Ottawa crowd, right? The fans weren't really on board yet. You can see them getting more and more involved. So it was a funny two-pack of tickets to sell, but it's obviously helped them sell out the Labor Day Classic game. Can't really call it Labor Day because it's the Sunday, right? It's supposed to be the Monday, but they do call it the Labor Day Classic. Yeah. And we're not supposed to call it the Banjo Bowl, the return match, but we always call it the Banjo Bowl because that's what it is. So
that's a Troy Westwood thing, right?
Yes, of course it is. And the Riders don't like to call it that because they think it was belittling to the fans of the Saskatchewan fans. So that's why that comes up all the time. But we call it the Banjo Bowl, and they call it the Banjo Bowl. The players don't so much, but the organization doesn't. So yes, is it the regular time? This is about when they announce that it's sold out somewhere along the line. But as I keep saying, it was weird to package that with that first game, but I think that they wanted to bump up that Ottawa crowd a little bit for the first game. And ever since then, the crowd's been getting a little bit bigger, it seems like, pretty impressed.
There's some growth. I had JC on, JC Abbott from Three Down Nation. And it is interesting because there has been marginal growth and, the needle is moving with the CFL, with the league mm-hmm. as a whole. And I think BC is, you know, partially to be credited for that. I mean, we're having problems in the East again. I don't think a lot of people are going to those Argos games.
Usually they're used to that. But you know what? When you look at it, it seems to be the crowds might be bigger than we've seen in the past, right? They're marginally bigger. And all of a sudden, Edmonton had a little bit better crowd. The worrisome places to me, Locker, you could say about the East. Well, the East has always kind of hung in there the same way.
Yeah.
I was really worried about Calgary and Edmonton.
Yeah.
Calgary's got a good team, so they're starting to come back. Edmonton, they're showing, and they're going back to the community a little bit and trying to get them involved again. Mm-hmm. So they're playing better. They're not winning, so I hope fans start going because that's a once-proud franchise. And to see Commonwealth Stadium with all the colored seats without anybody in them is really depressing, and I think that's I know they can hold their own financially, but that's still a worrisome place for me.
Cody looks like he's going to play. That's an interesting storyline. They didn't go back to Trey.
No, Cody Fajardo will give them a better chance as a starting quarterback. Trey Ford's still got a lot to learn. I know they've committed to him. They want him to be the starter. He's a Canadian. He's an exciting player. But I don't know if they built the offense the right way around him. They never let him run. He ran like 16 times in his first five games. That's not enough for a running quarterback.
Yeah.
I know you don't want to get him hurt and hit and injured, but they have a good backup in Cody Fajardo, who's proven himself. He's won a great cup. So, yeah, they have to go back to it. Does that mean much going forward? I don't know if there's a whole lot of optimism with that, with a move like that. When you have to you fall back into your fallback position, There's some players going and fans going, oh, geez, what about the future? Because how long does Cody Fajardo have left? Well, he probably has a few years when you look at the Rough Riders and they have a 39-year-old quarterback who's playing pretty darn well. And Cody Fajardo is a few years younger.
I do want to touch on a couple more things, so I'm going to keep you around for a bit. And let's just backtrack. Let's circle back to the attendance conversation here quickly. So the fact that, and we get compared a lot to Winnipeg, obviously, our tribals, I understand it. They've had a run of sellouts since last year, and obviously they're doing you know, great things, even with a downturn year as far as the standings go. But where do you stand on the success? This is a 7-1 team and the lack of sellouts in Regina. Like, how do you process that, personally, Derek?
Well, Winnipeg is good for them,
yeah,
right, for doing that. And
they've got 5 years of success.
Yeah,
right?
They've got people. Exactly. Then they know that team was going, you had to get on board because they might be a Grey Cup contender, and the Grey Cup's in Winnipeg this year. So that helps sell tickets as well, right?
Yeah.
Because season ticket holders get first dibs on Grey Cup tickets. The Rough Riders, ever since the COVID year, you know, our economy, I know that the premier keeps saying we're rising, but a lot of the discretionary money hasn't gone back into ticket sales. And once you get away from going to a game, if you're a Riser season ticket holder, once you stop going a little bit, it's tough to get into that routine again.
It's hard to get
you back.
And
that's what happened. But the people of Winnipeg are still in that because 5 straight Grey Cup appearances is pretty impressive, and you want to be a part of that. So once the Rough Riders get to that level, I think they're going to be close. Selling out, well, remember, Winnipeg's a lot bigger than Regina. And I know that they don't just draw from Regina, but half the crowd comes from outside the city. So they've got to have the schedule right. They've got to do it on the right days to make sure people can drive here. You got to work around harvest. You have to work around seating. All these things that are going on. So I think that draws a little bit away from the Rough Rider crowds. But Locker, you watch as this gets closer to the end and the teams are starting to come in. Obviously, Labor Day is a sellout, and that's when the boost really starts showing in the crowd.
Daryl Davis, the Double Take continues. I want to talk, Daryl, about smelling salts and your brewers, all right?
Okay.
So we got a little ball. We'll talk about that coming up next.
Groove.
This is 980 CGME and 650 CKOM.
The day destroys the night. Night divides the day.
This is the Green Zone. It's a Double Take. We got Daryl Davis hanging out with me. We were chatting about smelling salts because the NFL has banned it. I'm curious.
Kittle's going to retire because of it. Didn't he use them all the time?
I know. He is not happy about it.
I interrupted you. Sorry, you were going to say that.
No, that's fine. I did send a quick note because I looked this morning and I sent a quick note to Dave Naylor. And I just said, is there anything in the rules, anything about smelling salts? He hasn't got back to me yet. I don't think there is.
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Yeah,
have you smelled them, Locker?
Oh, yeah.
It's like
hockey.
Ammonia, right? They call them smelling salts, but it's basically ammonia in a crushed little vial, right?
Yeah. So I did it once, and I don't think I'd ever do it again.
Uh-uh. Makes your eyes water, and you jerk around, right?
It
hides some concussion syndrome.
Well, and I think that's part of the reason why the NFL is banning it is because it does mask concussion symptoms, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You asked me my first experience long time ago in the 60s. I was a stick boy for a senior hockey team called the Regina Caps. My dad played for them. So the trainer before every game would load me up with gum because they didn't wear.
You're the stick boy.
Yeah, the stick boy. Yeah, sorry. Did I say trainer? The stick boy. And the trainer would load me up with all this gum because they didn't wear mouth guards. And a few of them wore helmets, but they'd get plowed into the corner and get knocked out sometimes. And we didn't know anything about concussions, right? So the trainer would be running on the ice and say, Carol, hand me some of the smelling salts. So I'd reach in my pocket these little mesh vials of ammonia, the smelling salts, and he'd go onto the ice, and these guys are lying on the ice, waving under their noses, and they jerk around and wake up because of this, and then they'd haul them off to the bench and let them sit there and take more smelling salts. So if you've got a head injury, you shouldn't have anything to do with ammonia and smelling salts.
Yeah, I agree. I think there are going to be some people that are pretty upset about the idea. Like you said, George Kittle, he was quite upset about it because apparently he uses it quite a bit.
Before every drive, he said he uses it, right?
Does he?
Yes, that's what he was saying. I read a story about it today that before every drive, he hits himself up with some smelling salts. So he's thinking of retiring. He won't because of it, but
no.
He'll find something else.
Do you see...
Coffee works.
Do you see it in the CFL a lot? I don't see it in football much.
People don't talk about it very much, just like supplements and things that they're very careful about. Yeah.
Hockey.
I haven't seen it, to be honest, but I'm not on the sidelines on the bench very often, so I don't know who uses it, if they use it or if they don't.
That's why I was wondering if there's something in the CFL about that.
It'd be tough. That would be a tough one to test for, too, right? Because it just gets into your lungs and your brain for a minute, then... Yeah, it's not in your bloodstream. So that's
the one time, because I played, you know, beer league. Mm-hmm. There'd be the odd Lugan on the team that would do it, and I tried it once out of curiosity, and I thought to myself, "What are you? Like, I don't think this is poppers. Enhancing my performance. Like,
little poppers. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
They, you know, if the CFL makes it legal, I haven't seen anything in the rules that says that they're illegal. But if they did, I would say good for the CFL. You may as well, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, it can't be good for you.
Yeah, I remember doing it, and it was towards the end of my, if you can call it a career, and still no one passed to me.
Uh-huh. Didn't matter.
Last 2 years I played beer league. I don't think I touched the puck once.
And you and Jamie don't do it before the show?
No.
Not yet.
Mind you, it might make the show better. The green zone with smelling salts.
Let's do, we'll get smelling salts to sponsor a double take.
You know what? I want to talk about your Brewers a little bit.
Sure.
This is going to be an interesting year because, the Dodgers are still playing well, but they're not the Dodgers.
Who's got
this year.
The best record in Major League Baseball? Let me think. Who's won five games in a row? Let me think. Okay. Yeah, Brew Crew. I didn't wear a hat this year. I got to get a new hat.
You got to get another
playoff run. Yeah, I've got all types of them, but I realize that they're getting a little worn out because I've been wearing them a long time without a World Series appearance.
We were talking about Hank Aaron because on this day in 1972, he broke a Babe Ruth record for the most home runs with the Atlanta Braves. One team,
yeah.
I think it was 600 and then 601.
Yeah.
And then I was like, he played for another team, and I was like, oh, he played for the Brewers.
Yeah, yep, at the end of his career. Yes, yeah, great player. But the best one ever, still Robin Yount, man. So you can't have a better player than Robin Yount. What a great shortstop.
This is an interesting year for the majors with the Jays and the Yankees where they are. The like all of the, you know, the perennial favorites might be outside looking in when we're playing October ball.
Well, these are teams that have all
Tigers
got, most of them have got rich players, right? Some of them still do, but you're right. Not having the Braves in, bringing the Tigers in, the Cubs are still up there, right? But I'm so glad that I like the Cubs, but not nearly as much as the Brewers, and the Brewers are going to knock them out in that division.
You're right.
They're on a roll, man. Every once in a while, they go on this 10-game streak, 12-game, 11-game streak, I'm sorry, then a 6-game winning streak, I think, again tonight. So they're knocking the Braves around.
They got some monsters on the team, too. Like
some big young players.
Young guys, yeah.
Churio Jackson. Contreras, the catcher's a great player, and I'm still a Christian Yelich fan, outfielder. He's
nice.
Having a great season, and they got a 19-year-old pitching sensation, so watch for him in the playoffs.
I have seen that. Yeah, I've heard about this kid as well. Darryl Davis, thank you very much for popping in today, my friend, great and helping me out on a solo run here.
Have a good one, Locker. Good to see you.
All right, take care, my friend. Dale Hunter was just recently announced as the head coach of the Canadian World Juniors team. He has won gold for Canada in 2020, so he's not new to being behind the bench, and he's coming off his third Memorial Cup win with the London Knights. What's it going to take to beat the United States in the United States of America? That's up next on the Green Zone, 980 CGME and 650 CKOM.